This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
Want to know what's really scary? Seeing just how much you could have been saving on car insurance by switching to Geico. It's almost as scary as watching your dog growl at the wall and realize he sees something you don't. Get a quote at geico.com.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
Pence and Harris sound off on the pandemic. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka. On this Thursday, October 8th, glad you're with us. Here's what we have for you this hour.
The handling of the coronavirus was front and center as the two vice presidential candidates took part in their only debate. You'll hear some exchanges.
Hurricane Delta churning in the Gulf is heading toward Louisiana. It re-strengthened to a Category 2 earlier today.
President Trump released a video from the White House saying that contracting COVID-19 was a blessing from God.
And how food companies are preparing for the months ahead as the pandemic drags on.
So a lot of big food companies like Campbell and Kellogg and Unilever are really trying to prepare to prevent any kind of hiccups or massive outages and plant closures that could be coming as, you know, we're looking to a winter time. Cases are still rising and these manufacturers really have to continue to produce.
Heather Haddon at the Wall Street Journal on the food makers adding staff and capacity. The only vice presidential debate of the campaign season featured incumbent Republican Mike Pence defending the White House's response to the pandemic and Democratic challenger Kamala Harris holding the administration responsible for the climbing death toll. On other issues, Mr. Pence accused the Democratic ticket of planning to undo the economic achievements of the Trump administration by raising taxes.
Joe Biden and Kamala Harris would put us back in the Paris Climate Accord. They'd impose the Green New Deal, which would crush American energy, would increase the energy costs of American families in their homes, and literally would crush American jobs.
Ms. Harris countered that they wouldn't raise taxes for anyone making under $400,000 a year and blamed the Trump administration for failing to reach a trade deal with China.
America lost 300,000 manufacturing jobs. Farmers have experienced bankruptcy because of it. We are in a manufacturing recession because of it.
The two debated for 90 minutes. The next presidential debate, by the way, is scheduled for a week from today in Miami. Well, vice presidential candidate Kamala Harris has been largely kept under wraps to the frustration of her supporters. Will that change for the California senator following last night's debate against Mike Pence? In-depth analysis from Chris Catalago, national political reporter at Politico. Chris, what did you look at?
So we took a look. We started calling around to a lot of her friends and supporters and campaign folks to just kind of take stock of the 50 or so days. I think it's been a little bit more than that since she was picked as Biden's VP nominee. And I think a couple things really came up, which is she's performed in all these big moments that she's had. She had her speech, kind of reintroducing herself to Americans. She had a pre-buttal to the Republican National Convention where the campaign really put her up as the main Democrat to counter Donald Trump's message at the convention. She's gone out on the campaign trail a little bit more, as Joe Biden has as well. But at the same time, you know, they'd like to see more of her, as kind of to put it as bluntly as we can. And they think that she could be more of an asset for the campaign. Obviously, things are looking good in the polls for Joe Biden. But you never know. We saw in 2016, a lot of things happened that people were not predicting. And so the question is just, are they using Kamala Harris as a campaign to the fullest extent?
It was an interesting anecdote you opened the story with, talking about her in a meeting when she held office in California, talking about she didn't seem open to being a president one day, but was okay with being a vice president. Explain that.
Yeah, I think it was framed or kind of explained as a joke at the time, but the thought was that, you know, the president is the job where you've got all the responsibility, and vice president is one where you can kind of sit back and essentially, you know, sort of learn on the job. And I think, you know, she ran her own campaign. Clearly that did not come to fruition because she tried to become president and ran her own campaign and came up short like the other Democrats. Could never dislodge Biden's lead. For her, it was particularly in South Carolina. And so I think it was people recalled that story to talk about this role as vice president as one that, that has suited her so far. I mean, it gives her all the advantages politically of being sort of the understudy.
We're speaking with Chris Catalogo, national political reporter at Politico. His piece is called Why Kamala Harris Has Been So Quiet as Biden's Number Two. So quiet, in fact, you say she is probably the most, the least visible vice presidential candidate in recent memory. But is it common for VP candidates to play a big role?
I mean, it's not common, but, you know, like I said, the fact that these folks are deciding clearly not to have rallies, I mean, this is a decision. We've seen Donald Trump before he contracted COVID himself. He was holding pretty big rallies, several thousand people at airport hangars all across the country and in these swing states. Joe Biden has decided not to do that, and I think that has been probably the biggest factor in Kamala Harris not being as visible. There are other examples we cite in the piece. Took several weeks, if not more than a couple months, for her to give her first very brief interview to the traveling press corps that joins her on the road. She was prioritizing interviews with local news stations in various states, and I think vice presidential contenders in modern times have done more with the traveling press corps. They've done more national interviews, more sit-downs than she's done. She's appeared here and there briefly. She was on television after Joe Biden and Donald Trump's debate last week, and she's popped up here and there. But they're almost kind of borrowing this Obama strategy with her when it comes to media, which is to do a lot of podcasts that are not for political audiences, focus on really targeted toward these shows and audiences where people are not hanging on every sort of political maneuver in the horse race and are looking at her more as kind of an ambassador to pop culture.
Thanks, Chris. Chris Catalogo, national political reporter at Politico. The top doctor at the White House says President Trump's recovery from a COVID-19 infection continues to progress. Dr. Sean Conley said in a memo that Mr. Trump had gone 24 hours without any coronavirus symptoms. He also said the president had not had a fever in 4 days and that his respiratory rate was stable and in normal range. Meanwhile, the president released a new video from the White House in which he said getting COVID-19 was a blessing from God.
I think this was a blessing from God that I caught it. This was a blessing in disguise. I caught it. I heard about this drug. I said, let me take it. It was my suggestion. I said, let me take it. And it was incredible the way it worked. Incredible.
Meanwhile, the drug maker Regeneron said last evening that it had submitted an application to the FDA for emergency approval of the experimental antibody cocktail that President Trump had praised just hours earlier. As part of that, 2017 financial disclosure statements show Mr. Trump previously earned capital gains from Regeneron Pharmaceuticals. It's 14 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Let me tell you about my new favorite way to pass the time while commuting. It's the app called Blinkist. Blinkist works on your phone, your tablet, or your web browser. Blinkist takes the need-to-know information from thousands of nonfiction books and whittles it down to just 15 minutes. Successful people like business leaders are well known for reading self-improvement books. I just finished listening to Snowball, a Warren Buffett biography. Listen to Blinkist while commuting or maybe exercising, even while you're waiting for your kids to finish practice. Blinkist has the latest titles from bestseller lists as well as the classic nonfiction titles you always meant to read. I also like listening to some of the history titles since I never had much good history in school. Right now, for a limited time, Blinkist has a special offer just for our audience. Go to Blinkist.com/morning to try it free for 7 days and save 25% off your new subscription. That's Blinkist, spelled B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T, Blinkist.com/morning to start your free 7-day trial. You'll also save 25%, but only when you sign up at Blinkist.com/morning. Glad you're with us. Welcome into Thursday. Hurricane Delta re-strengthened to a Category 2 storm earlier today with maximum sustained winds of 100 miles an hour as it sizes up the Louisiana coast for some time tomorrow. The storm battered Mexico's Yucatan Peninsula yesterday, knocking down trees and power lines. The National Hurricane Center said Delta is expected to grow in size as it approaches the northern Gulf Coast, where there's an increasing likelihood of life-threatening storm surge and dangerous hurricane-force winds beginning tomorrow, especially for Louisiana. New Orleans Mayor LaToya Cantrell.
Currently, the city of New Orleans is outside of the cone, but the impact will still be significant, and we're planning for that as well.
Forecasters say, in addition, Delta could bring 4 to 8 inches of rain, with up to 12 inches in some isolated spots. Heavy rainfall could result in flash, urban, and small stream flooding, along with minor river flooding. When Delta moves inland, heavy rain is expected in the Ohio Valley and Mid-Atlantic region this weekend. It's 20 minutes after the hour on This Morning. Here's Jennifer Koshenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
Last night's vice presidential debate had sharp moments, some interruptions and violations of the debate clock, but the dynamics between Mike Pence and Kamala Harris represented a return to some semblance of normal presidential politics. Harris called President Trump's pandemic response the greatest failure of any presidential administration in the history of our country.
They knew what was happening and they didn't tell you.
Pence accused Harris of playing politics with people's lives.
China is to blame for the coronavirus. And President Trump is not happy about it. He's made that very clear, made it clear again today.
Number two.
President Trump crediting an experimental drug treatment with helping his recovery from COVID-19 and suggesting his diagnosis could be a blessing in disguise for the nation's battle against the pandemic. In a video posted last evening, Trump says his improving condition sheds light on an experimental antibody cocktail.
I want everybody to be given the same treatment as your president because I feel great. I feel like perfect.
Number three.
The coronavirus outbreak has infected 34 White House staffers and other contacts in recent days, according to an internal government memo, an indication that the disease has spread among more people than previously known. The new figures underscore the growing crisis in the White House. Former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin, who has been charged in the killing of George Floyd, has been released from a correctional facility on bail. Chauvin, who was seen in a video pressing his knee into Floyd's neck for nearly 8 minutes during the fatal Memorial Day arrest, had been at the maximum security prison in Oak Park Heights since late May. He posted a $1 million conditional bail yesterday. Well, if you search online for Anna Kendrick, you might find trouble. Computer security company McAfee says the actress tops the list of most dangerous celebrities to search for online. Kendrick was number 4 last year. Second on the list, P. Diddy, followed by Blake Lively, Mariah Carey, Justin Timberlake, and Taylor Swift. McAfee warns that searching those names tends to generate results that could land people on sites that can install malware on their devices, often without a user's knowledge.
Really? Anna Kendrick, huh?
I don't know why, but watch out.
All right. Thank you, Jen. Do business more powerfully during Dell's semi-annual sale. Save up to 45% on Dell computers and servers with Intel Core processors. Also, save on electronics and accessories, plus free shipping on everything and special financing with Dell Business Credit. Call 877-ASK-DELL to talk to a Dell Technologies advisor who can help you find just the right tech. That's 877-ASK-DELL or visit dell.com/businessdeals.
When it comes to mobility, Michigan is making what the rest of the world hasn't even thought of yet. Our state is home to two world-class autonomous vehicle testing sites, and we're first in the U.S. for mobility-related patents. With over 500 miles of roadway equipped for connected vehicle testing, it's no wonder that everyone is moving to where it all started. So if you're ready to move into the future with your mobility business, visit planetm.com/pure-opportunity.
Glad you're with us. Big food companies are working to increase their output and protect workers as the virus continues to spread, representing an opportunity for elevated sales to persist, but also a risk to operations if the public health crisis hurts their own productivity. More on what they're doing from Heather Haddon, reporter at the Wall Street Journal. Heather, what are you hearing?
So a lot of big food companies like Campbell and Kellogg and Unilever are really trying to prepare to prevent any kind of hiccups or massive outages and plant closures that could be coming as, you know, we're looking to a winter time. Cases are still rising of the coronavirus, and these manufacturers really have to continue to produce and keep up production as it seems like people are still buying these staples. So we're talking about basics that you find in your pantry. I think one great example is Goldfish crackers. So early on in the pandemic, there was a real run on them, and Campbell, which makes them, said, you know, we need more. And so they have since invested in co-manufacturing plants, which is other manufacturing plants produce these. They've also actually spent capital to increase volume that they can produce in one of their specific plants to try to prevent this from happening. These companies are also making sure that they have even more labor than they need at any one time on hand. That's to help people quarantine if there might be a suspected case, but also these companies say that some of these workers do need breaks, that they've been working for very long stretches for long hours,
yeah.
And so they need some time. So they are trying to prepare for that.
We're speaking with Heather Haddon, reporter at the Wall Street Journal. Her piece is called "Food Makers Add Staff and Capacity as Pandemic Persists." Well, as you referenced, though, the risks are still there, which could be disruptive to the whole supply, right?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, Unilever talked about having to close one or two plants during the pandemic because of the virus and having to shift all that volume of production to other places in the world. You know, this is when it's helpful to be a big manufacturer. You have a whole capacity and network of facilities that can pick up that slack, but that is not just turning off a light switch. I mean, that takes a lot of work to do. So, you know, these companies are really trying to also invest in things like automation for the future to prevent having to have so many workers in such intensive conditions, you know, particularly for, say, like a meat processing plant where the virus has really spread. But, you know, they're also making sure they have enough tests. They're making sure their workers know that when they're outside their manufacturing plants to really try to be safe and healthy. So they are taking all kinds of steps.
There was, I think, a Unilever executive in your story. She said the plants almost look like hospitals these days. How so?
Because they're full of folks with so much PPE. So all those masks, those gloves, you know, uniforms in some cases, to really make sure everything is happening sanitary and up to standard.
Thanks, Heather. Heather Haddon, reporter at the Wall Street Journal. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. To say that 2020 has been a year of uncertainty is an understatement, right? The way we work together changed overnight. Businesses learned pretty quickly that to adapt, they need a new way to get the essential resources they need. That's how Fiverr can help. Fiverr's online marketplace connects you with freelancers for hundreds of digital services, things like graphic design, web programming, film editing, and a lot more. And there's no guessing games. You customize your search by service, deadline, price, reviews, whatever matters to you. And you know the cost up front, no negotiating at all. Whether you're launching your first business, scaling your current business, or in need of extra support to complete a project, Fiverr's global network of on-demand freelance talent has worked with the most influential brands in the world and is here to help. Check out Fiverr.com and receive 10% off your first order by using my code Gordon. Find all the digital services you need in one place at Fiverr.com. Code Gordon. Again, that's Fiverr.com and code Gordon.
The top stories and expert interviews that make sense of what you care about. This is America's First News, This Morning with Gordon Deal.
Thanks for spending time with us and welcome into Thursday, October 8th. Gordon Deal, Jennifer Koshenka. Some of our top stories and headlines. Pence and Harris engage in their one and only debate. Hurricane Delta gains strength and targets Louisiana. President Trump appears to have softened his stance on another stimulus package. Two ISIS militants accused of torturing and murdering Western hostages are now in the U.S. to face charges in Virginia. Regal Cinemas closing all 536 theaters today. Lakers can win the NBA championship, and the family reunited with a lost cat after being separated 2 years ago, evacuating a wildfire. That story in about 20 minutes.
This portion of the program is brought to you by Capital One. Capital One is right in the palm of your hand, so you can check your balance, deposit checks, pay bills, and transfer money from your phone with a top-rated app. This is Banking Reimagined. Get started online anytime. What's in your wallet? Capital One N.A., member FDIC. The coronavirus pandemic has narrowed a long-standing divide between most Republicans and Democrats on a wide range of proposals to support the U.S. economy, from raising the minimum wage to making childcare more affordable. Jessica Menton, personal finance reporter at USA Today, says this challenges the conventional belief that Americans are divided heading into the 2020 election. Jess, it's interesting. Explain this.
It is interesting because obviously heading into election day, it just seems like we're in this very divisive environment now, given that, you know, we've been in the background of a recession this year, and obviously with the pandemic continuing to drag on. But we did a survey, USA Today did, with Public Agenda and Ipsos, and it found that the pandemic actually narrowed a longstanding divide between most Republicans and Democrats when it came to raising the minimum wage and making child care more affordable, which really is kind of challenging this conventional belief that Americans are actually divided before Election Day. And a lot of that has to do, when you're looking at those two key issues, minimum wage and child care, are because so many people were affected during the pandemic, especially these low-wage jobs that really got decimated in those initial months with the lockdown. And then also child care, people struggling trying to figure out how to grapple with that, especially if it's just because it can be so expensive. And again, so many people on the lower wage side losing those jobs. And so I think it's interesting when you look at how, because Public Agenda and Ipsos had worked with us on a survey back in February before, you know, the shutdown began, and seeing that narrowing divide on both sides of the aisle, just given that what happened during the pandemic. So it is interesting to see that there are ways that the parties are coming together.
It goes back to, I think, what a lot of people will argue, and that's when you discuss things like adults and not try to browbeat somebody into your way of thinking, you can find a lot of ground. Then it just becomes how we're going to get there.
Exactly. And it's interesting, in the policy domain, most people are actually on the same page, even though it does seem to be like there is all of this division between Americans. And it seems as though, especially when it comes to those things, like having to figure out how do we get affordable child care, and then also raising the minimum wage. It was just interesting to speak to many different Americans through, you know, different backgrounds, through different parties, whether they were Republican, a Democrat, independents, just hearing about what they had to say and their feelings towards those issues.
We're speaking with Jessica Menton, personal finance reporter at USA Today. Her piece is called COVID-19 Has Narrowed the Divide Between Republicans and Democratic Voters on Ways to Support Workers from Pay to Child Care. When it comes to something like the minimum wage, and this maybe gets into the debate a little bit, I understand everybody wants to make more money per hour. And business owners are probably of the mindset like, hey, I don't need the government telling me how to run my business. But by the same token, they probably will say, to a certain extent, this will prevent turnover, costly turnover, if folks were a little happier with what they made.
Mm-hmm. And something that kept coming up with people that I was speaking with on both sides of the aisle throughout the U.S., they were saying that, you know, there was one woman, for instance, who she is a registered Republican. She's almost 50 years old, and she works as a home health care aide just outside of Buffalo in New York. And she was saying that, you know, it's frustrating for her when she's making a little over $16 an hour, and she's looking at someone who might be working at a fast food chain, who might be, you know, either in high school still or just out of high school, that's making, you know, maybe near, maybe not quite at $16 yet, but near her. And she was thinking that she actually agreed with raising minimum wage, but she was wanting something where there's some sort of tiered thing where, you know, based on your skill set. So someone like her, since she has more experience in that field as a home health care aide, where she could kind of be staggered off, where if she was, you know, earlier in her career, maybe she was making a little bit less, but at this point she'd be making more. So it was interesting hearing people's different perspectives on that.
Mm-hmm. A totally different subject, but that is just mind-boggling what those home health care workers make. I mean, they are indirectly saving lives.
Especially in a pandemic. And that was another thing that she did bring up, the fact that she is having to go in people's homes and she's having to help people with this, all of this in the background of a pandemic happening and people getting sick. And so it is kind of mind-boggling. Sometimes you might not realize that it's not the stereotypical jobs that you might think that are making those lower wages. Mm-hmm. There are people in, when you think, when it comes to healthcare and higher paying jobs, there still are people making not as much as you'd think.
Thanks, Jess. Jessica Menton, personal finance reporter at USA Today. Hey, glad you're with us, and welcome into Friday Eve. It is time now for the mic drop with this morning's Mike Gavin.
Good morning. Well, we know it's a good idea to lock up your cash, jewelry, and expensive electronics to prevent thievery. Add to the list cooking grease. An unidentified person has reportedly stolen used cooking oil from a Chick-fil-A in Athens, Georgia. The stolen cooking oil was reportedly worth $1,000. The alleged thief reportedly dressed up like an employee of a company that recycles animal processing food waste, including used cooking oils. Cooking oil can be used to make biodiesel after it's converted into what's called yellow grease. Last year, the Washington Post reported that $75 million worth of used cooking grease is stolen every year.
Wow.
Little did we know.
Yeah.
That stuff that we, you know, put into the cans and throw in the garbage or whatever. We don't pour it down the drain, of course.
Nope.
Don't do that. But little did we know it was worth some cash.
Right. And I guess it's just picked up by a guy dressed in some official-looking uniform with some buckets.
It was a whole elaborate scheme. He had a van that had a logo on it that they thought was this company that was supposed to be coming to collect it. Like, it was that valuable, I guess, that you go to all this trouble to try and steal it.
That valuable, and they've come up with the clever sounding name yellow grease.
Yeah,
it's not just disposed garbage or cooking oil. It's yellow grease.
It's all about the marketing.
It's like a flower almost, in fact, Mike. Yeah.
Yes. And we know it was an incredibly simple video. Just a man, his skateboard, some cranberry juice, and the smooth sounds of Fleetwood Mac.
This guy's still making news.
Number three for him on the mic drop. Whatever inspired Iowa man Nathan Apodaca to create a now viral video of him skating, drinking juice, and lip syncing, it's paying off in a big way. We first told you about the video that was becoming a sensation on TikTok last week. Then we told you that none other than Mick Fleetwood himself made his own parody video. Now the original clip has become so popular, with over 27 million views, that Apodaca is getting some new wheels, courtesy of Ocean Spray. The company, who could see a sales boost because of the video, gifted Apodaca with a new cranberry red truck, filled with cran raspberry drinks and a new skateboard. The ride was much needed for Apodaca, who was skating to work that fateful day in September after his car broke down. Apodaca posted a new video of him driving the new truck and thanking Ocean Spray for the new wheels in the caption. The video, of course, is just him driving, drinking juice, with Stevie Nicks singing in the background.
This is unbelievable.
It's an unbelievable story. 27 million views.
Right.
Parody videos all over the place. You know, just a 10-second clip of him skateboarding to work.
And he has turned that into a brand new car.
And was it $10,000 at least in his GoFundMe account?
Right.
We did that story as well.
At least.
So, it's been a good couple
something.
Of weeks for him.
Never could have predicted that. He never could have predicted that.
Yes.
Thought he was just being clever on TikTok.
It's just, just likes to have fun, he says.
That's unbelievable. I got a soft spot for him, by the way, since his name is Apodaca, right?
Yeah.
Former Mets pitcher Bob Apodaca from the 70s, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. Even
I wasn't going to make that connection.
trying to tie something in there. 13 minutes in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
For the ones working tirelessly to keep their coworkers safe, for the ones rising to new challenges, for the ones rebuilding stronger than before, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, free access to product specialists, safety recovery guides, and 24/7 support. It's part of our commitment to help you adapt and recover in these challenging times. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Do business more powerfully during Dell's semi-annual sale. Save up to 45% on Dell computers and servers with Intel Core processors. Also, save on electronics and accessories, plus free shipping on everything and special financing with Dell Business Credit. Call 877-ASK-DELL to talk to a Dell Technologies advisor who can help you find just the right tech. That's 877-ASK-DELL or visit dell.com/businessdeals. Thanks for being with us. People who make too little to file income taxes now have an extra 5 weeks to register with the IRS to claim their stimulus check. The previous registration deadline was to be next week, but the IRS has now extended the deadline to November 21st for people to use the non-filer portal.
The economic impact payment provides $1,200 for individuals making less than $75,000 a year and couples making less than $150,000. In addition, as you may recall, the IRS includes $500 per qualifying child under the age of 17. Last month, the IRS sent out letters to nearly 9 million households saying they may be eligible for a still unclaimed stimulus check. More than 7 million people have already used the non-filer portal, according to the IRS. The agency has distributed more than 160 million stimulus checks as of early summer. The letters and extended deadline, by the way, continue an effort by the IRS and community groups to put much-needed money into the hands of people who could potentially miss out on the checks. 8 minutes now in front of the hour. Once again, here's Jennifer Koschenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
Mike Pence and Kamala Harris traded barbs through plexiglass shields last night in a debate dominated by the pandemic, taxes, the economy, fracking, the Supreme Court, and racial injustice. Harris questioned why President Trump last week told a white supremacist group to stand by.
We are talking about an election in 27 days where last week the president of the United States took a debate stage in front of 70 million Americans and refused to condemn white supremacists.
Pence says there's no systemic racism in law enforcement.
Well, our heart breaks for the loss of any innocent American life. And the family of Breonna Taylor has our sympathies. But I trust our justice system. A grand jury that refused the evidence.
The debate was more civil than last week's between the presidential candidates.
Number two.
The head of the White House Security Office is gravely ill with COVID-19 and has been hospitalized since September. Creed Bailey leads the office in charge of credentialing people for access to the White House and works closely with the Secret Service.
Number three.
Hurricane Delta strengthened to a Category 2 storm early today with maximum sustained winds of 100 miles per hour as it charges toward the Gulf Coast. Landfalls expected sometime tomorrow near the Louisiana coast. Governor John Bel Edwards says residents need to get out of the way.
What I'm trying to impart to the people of Louisiana is that by the end of the day Thursday, you need to be where you intend to be as you ride out the storm.
Delta could bring 4 to 8 inches of rain with isolated maximum amounts of 12 inches through parts of the lower Mississippi Valley. Well, as COVID-19 spreads now to players on a few NFL teams, the spotlight is shining brightly on the Tennessee Titans. Word coming out that a group of Titans players held an informal workout last week at a local school after their team facility had been closed due to the outbreak. The school's headmaster has confirmed that the Titans worked out together at the school on September 30th, a day after 8 members of the team tested positive. The NFL and Players Union are now conducting an investigation into whether the Titans violated COVID-19 protocols.
All right, thank you, Jen. 6 minutes in front of the hour. Thanks for being with us. A California woman who feared her pet cat had died in a 2018 wildfire has been reunited with him after 23 months when he was found by a neighbor. Lindsay Metz said she and her children had only 30 minutes to evacuate as the campfire approached their home in Butte County. So when their 8-year-old black cat Artemis fled from the house, there was no time to go look for him. She told KRCR Television that she finally came to terms with the idea that Artemis might have perished in the fire. But her hopes were rekindled nearly 2 years after she last saw the feline when a friend posted on Facebook about a black cat found in the area where Ms. Metz lived before the fire. She corresponded with the other person and soon discovered the cat was indeed her long-lost Artemis. She said a piece of her heart is back where it belongs. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koschenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News. It's October, and what does that mean? Well, it's Geico-ween, of course. Don't be spooked by high rates on car insurance. Geico is brewing up spellbinding savings that they're crafting just for you. See how much you could save. Get a quote today at geico.com.